the Veritex Community Bank Studios. ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Now bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Joel, I'm Jeremy. It is a Tuesday edition of The Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Well, how about the shortstop market since the last time we talked, huh? Corey Seager, 325 for 10 years to the Rangers. Javier Baez signing a big deal with Detroit. Haven't seen the details on it yet, but a long-term deal for the Detroit Tigers. That shortstop market has heated up since we last spoke.
7 and 140 is what I heard. Almost a bargain for the Detroit Tigers if that's what they paid for Javi Baez.
Bargain?
Yeah, because of the fact that if you look at it, if you're the Tigers, you were expecting to spend $300 million for Carlos Correa. That was the rumor. That's where the hot stove got red hot when A.J. Hinch and Carlos sat down to break bread at breakfast or at lunch with breakfast food. But at the same time, if you're the Tigers and say, well, I might not have gotten everything that I think Carlos Correa could be, but I got $140 million less for a shortstop for 7 years that defensively is as good and has more pop but less average and strikes out more, I'll take my chances with that if I'm the Tigers because I'm not there yet to be a championship-caliber team to want to overspend.
See, I'm on the other side of it. I don't think this rules the Tigers out at all. Just like Marcus Semien didn't rule the Rangers out from getting another shortstop, I don't believe the Tigers are completely out of the Carlos Correa sweepstakes either. Does it lower their odds of signing Carlos Correa? Yeah, that's sure. That you can have that. But Baez is a player that can play multiple positions. We saw that with the Mets because they already had Francisco Lindor. He can literally play anywhere on the diamond besides catcher. So I'm not eliminating the Tigers as a team that could still sign Carlos Correa. But the storyline to me and the lead to me, whenever you see these two big contracts is, I mean, again, another nail in the coffin of Carlos Correa returning to the Houston Astros. He's going to get every bit that Corey Seager got, 325 for 10. And where he gets that, I think, is a fair conversation that we'll have later in the show. When you see Seager's deal hit Twitter and hit the news cycle, 325 for 10, your thought is immediately Carlos Correa is getting 10 years if he wants, and he's probably going to get north of $325 million if he wants.
Yeah, and the other thing that, honestly, Jeremy, we talked about yesterday that bothered me, it's not like the remaining teams that are in the shortstop market are the Cleveland Indians and the, you know, take your middle of the market small Kansas City Royals. No, the Yankees are still looking. The Dodgers now are looking if they don't want to do it internally. And you've got major market, big-time cash, and you've got that caveat that Daniela seems to want to be that big city, big market kind of gal, and she has a lot to say with where Carlos will play, and that's a huge drawback if you're an Astros fan. You can hope that as the market shrinks, it increases the chances for the Astros. That might be okay to think that way if it was Kansas City, Cleveland, and other small markets, because the Dodgers and the Yankees are still firmly in the mix. And don't discount the Cubs, who are looking to spend money. They just haven't really spent it yet because they got rid of all their big salaries. You're in a world of hurt if you're an Astros fan from the simple perspective of the choices that he has to make are going to involve the cities that have the most to spend.
See, that's the side I'm on it as well, is that you have more teams that signed the shortstops. And look, Rangers signed two of them that were on the market that were potential shortstops that could be signed. Semien's obviously not going to play shortstop now with Seager signing with the Rangers. Javier Baez is another guy that plays a ton of positions. And you start to see, like, Astro optimist. And look, if you're an optimist, that's fine. I'm an optimist about certain things. I like to consider myself a realist. Some people would say I'm a pessimist, but whatever. I still feel like there's a lot of teams that could be involved in the conversation with Carlos Correa. Like, people say, okay, well, the Rangers are crossed off. Detroit's now crossed off. Hang tight there. The Yankees, hey, they're kind of talking to Andrelton Simmons, and Kiner Falefa has been a target of theirs. And like, well, they're crossing out the Yankees already. A lot of folks are thinking that the Dodgers wouldn't be an option for a couple of reasons. One's because they hate Carlos Correa in L.A. Two, that they have a very good plan B in Trey Turner, who they acquired at the trade deadline, that can just move over and play shortstop. I don't think that the market is as dried up as people think. There's always mystery teams. There's always, like, you would consider low market teams that are willing to spend money to sell tickets to try to, you know, bridge, try to make themselves a playoff contender. And you still have some big market teams that the further and further that the free agency goes on, although it's going to lock up tomorrow, Major League Baseball with the lockout, they're going to want to make a splash to boost their chances of going deep into the playoffs. I don't think the market's dried up at all.
No, I don't think the market's dried up at all. And I, like I said, not to mention the fact that aside from the big market teams that are still in the mix, that all you need is competition in any way, shape, or form to drive the price up. Not that the competitive other shortstops in their contracts haven't driven the price up. But now when you get a couple of teams, including if you have one, if not both, of the major markets involved in any kind of a bidding war, it's going to boost the price even more. And it's going to move the Astros completely out of the mix unless for some weird reason, and I don't think it's that weird, but I think that from a financial standpoint, it would be absolute stupidity for Carlos Correa to say, no, the hometown discount and the lure of staying to play with Altuve in the city that I love, that my wife grew up in, that I'm going to stay here. I hate to break it to you, Astros fans. That ain't going to get it done. And the fact that with the competition going up, with more and more teams still involved, like you said, the market is wet. It ain't dry. And it's getting more moist by the minute. And so the fact that you have not only teams involved, but those big market teams as well, I think I'm leaning more and more your side of things, that he's all but gone and he is going to get paid for a couple of lifetimes. And you can't fault him for that, because you may sometimes you don't get any opportunities. But if you get this one opportunity where you don't have to do anything more than what you've already done and you're guaranteeing yourself a lifetime of financial comfort, you're taking it.
Yeah, I don't blame them for taking it either. North of 325, you think, for Correa?
Yeah, I think it's going to get there, yeah.
North of the 32.5 average annual value that Seager's getting?
I think I think that's what his agent's going to use as the framework. I think his agent's going to go, hey, if Seager got that, Correa gets at least that. I think that's wherever the negotiations go with whoever they're talking to, they go, we'll start with Seager's money and we'll go from there.
My top side to the start of free agency was 350 for 10. I felt like that was going to be the largest contract Correa got. I don't feel like the gap is that great from Seager to Correa. I still like it doesn't change the number for me. I still think that the top end value for Correa is going to be 350, an average annual of $35 million, unless he signs like a big 5-year deal, 6-year deal, which I don't see him doing. But like the Scherzer model, where it's higher average annual but a shorter term deal, I don't think he's going to do that. But I still feel like 350 is the absolute maximum that Correa would get. Like, there's not that much of a difference between Correa and Seager as players. I think Correa is slightly better. So I think Correa is ultimately going to fall in somewhere between 325 to 350 million.
Yeah, and I think that, you know what, we kept thinking about who's going to be that guy left holding the bag, looking for his bag of cash. Who'd have thought that, and maybe, aside from maybe you, that it might be Trevor Story. It might be a guy that might be the last on the list that's still looking for a team that's going, hey, wait a minute, what about me? And maybe he has to go look for a deal on the cheap, you know, because like you said, I mean, one of the key things that people forget about is with Trey Turner already in Los Angeles and the fact that Chris Taylor's a free agent, but he plays all those different positions, kind of like you were saying with Baez, but he's a hero in Los Angeles too. They might just go on the cheap and say, anybody can play second. He can play short. We're going to be fine. We've overspent in the past. We'll save our money for when we really need it, but we're going to be just fine. But it doesn't preclude anybody else from getting involved in the mix either, going, hey, we want to be a part of this. We still need a shortstop. We want an upgrade. We want to make a splash. Everybody's trying to do that before, like you said, tomorrow. So all bets are off, and you know, the money's just flowing all over the place.
Second question is, does Carlos Correa get signed before the lockout? When the clock strikes midnight tonight, is Carlos Correa going to be, you know, signing a contract before the lockout tomorrow?
I just don't feel like he is.
I don't think so.
I think that, you know what, he's going to wait, hold out for every single option and all the dollars he can get or whatever makes sense. And I think because of that, he's not in a hurry. He knows that one way or another, like I said, he's done all he had to do. He's going to get paid, whether it's before or after the collective bargaining agreement is settled upon. He's going to get paid. He's not in a rush.
Yeah, I'm with you. Although I didn't see the Corey Seager news striking as soon as it did. You know, on the drive home, all of a sudden, Seager signing the deal with the Rangers. There wasn't rumors that he was close. All of a sudden, it was just boom, Seager to Texas. So yeah, I'd be surprised too if Correa signs before the day is done. But we were blindsided yesterday by Seager.
For sure.
Like, would it completely shock me if Correa blindsizes today? No, it
wouldn't. Plus, how does anybody feel sorry for the owners if they're throwing money like Max Scherzer got for a guy that plays every fifth day, and the money just keeps going up for each guy that's the next guy on the list to get checked off in terms of going to a new team and getting all that cash? It's like, it's hard for anybody to feel sorry for ownership, going, you're rolling in it for the salaries to be going up when you should be panicked about the fact that there might be a work stoppage. And instead, it's quite the opposite.
You know, did you hear what they talked today? And apparently there's been some progress and there's been some stories leaked on what the MLB and the MLBPA want to get done, et cetera, et cetera. They were supposed to have a meeting today, and they met for 30 minutes. So posturing already taking place between two sides. Look, it's going to be a long winter in Major League Baseball as far as I'm concerned. Like, there's not going to be anything done soon. And the things that drive, like coming to terms and settling on wherever you want to settle and compromising, usually are deadlines.
Yeah.
And the deadline to me, as far as a new CBA in Major League Baseball, probably pitchers and catchers reporting, maybe even spring training, maybe even real games not being lost,
that's
right?
The big thing to me. Look, we just got done saying they're rolling in it, and no one should be worried about or feeling sorry for ownership because they're making money hand over fist. The only thing that really bothers them is if they start not making money hand over fist. So if they start missing regular season games and TV revenues and all the things that go with that, then there might be some urgency to get a deal done. For now, all the way through spring training. Look, everybody dreads spring training. It's just the dog days.
It makes money, though.
It does for the markets that don't have teams, right? You know, you go to in Florida, all the different cities in Arizona, and it's cash cows because the team gets a little extra. The city makes a lot more. But overall, it isn't even close to the dollars and cents that they're going to make in the regular season. I think that's when they really start pressing the panic button, when the kind of short-term future says you might start missing regular season games. That's when they might panic a little.
The Astros did hold a press conference earlier today. They introduced Hector Norris to the Houston media. James Click was basically ignoring any questions he got on Carlos Correa. Didn't really give any news as to that. Now, the most newsworthy item that he said during the press conference, which most people are going to find boring because Carlos Correa is the headliner as far as the Houston Astros stories are going these days. Click did say that Lance McCullers Jr. is progressing well. That's good news, right? That's great news. And that the team expects contributions from Pedro Baez and Rafael Montero next season. So if they're expecting contributions from Baez and Montero, the Astros might be done signing free agents this offseason.
I don't know if they're done signing free agents. I think now that adds more credence to the fact that they're done with the bullpen. Like, they're going to fill whatever holes are remaining with guys that they spent money on in the past, or a throw in a trade like Montero. But when he got here, in the short stint that he was here, because he's got a plus fastball, that they looked like there was a guy that had some talent and some arm strength that they could deal with and work with, that maybe they could be the next, I don't want to say Garrett Cole, Charlie Morton-esque, but they maybe could add a pitch to his repertoire, tune some things up, and get him to be someone that contributes. The thing that drives me nuts is the entire situation with Baez, because you didn't do enough due diligence on the medicals before you went and gave him the 2-year deal. Now he's on your books. He gave you nothing last year except for, 7 miles an hour less on a fastball and a whole lot of waiting. You better damn well hope somehow, some way he can contribute this year. Otherwise, that's a blemish on James Click going, the hell did you do that for?
Especially the 2-year deal, right?
Right.
Because now you're on the hook for at least a substantial amount of money next season. But you're right. As far as the Astros adding to this bullpen, if I'm, again, reading too much into a soundbite from James Click, the fact that he already signed Norris, the fact that he's expecting contributions from Baez and Montero, the bullpen's already wrapped up for the start of next season. Maybe they can find a bat, although I'm not sure that they love any of the bats that are out there in free agency as well. 713.
But also, don't discount a trade.
I'm with you on that.
Yeah.
I mean, that trades.
Cincinnati looks
sure.
like another fire sale. Pittsburgh's already showing you. Cincinnati and Pittsburgh, that's all they do. They develop young talent just to give it away for pennies on the dollar to try and reinvest in another rebuild before they even get it rebuilt.
It's not as promising as a concept with Click as opposed to Luno. Luno was uber aggressive. Yeah. Luno would go out in the offseason at the deadline. He was uber aggressive. James Click has shown that he can be aggressive, but he picks his spots, right? Like, he didn't make a trade last offseason, and the trades that he made at the deadline were almost out of necessity to help an ailing bullpen. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776 on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. He's at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. I'm at Jeremy Branham. Justin Reed got himself into a little bit of trouble last week. Did not play on Sunday, was a healthy scratch. He's a free agent at the end of this season. Should the Texans let Justin Reed walk? That's next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Get low when the whistle goes.
Wheel. Fun. Get low when the whistle goes. Sports. ESPN 97.5.
After 45 years,
should the Texans re-sign Justin Reed in the offseason? We'll get to that in about 3 minutes. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Charlie, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees.
Hey, guys, I appreciate that. I hate to bring algebra into this, but shouldn't all of these athletes be thinking about take-home pay? If you make $32 million in New York City or California, it's a lot different from making $32 million in Texas. We're a low-tax state. You go to those places, Uncle Sam and the other state governments take all the money away. Maybe that's going to be a factor in Korea's decision. I'll shut up and listen to you guys talk. Thank you, man.
Thanks, Charlie. Appreciate the call. You can be hopeful. I mean, you can hope that. Look, I know in all my years working in this town and the discussions with not just basketball players, but all the athletes that you see in the city throughout the year, from the no state tax to the cheap real estate for really big properties, it is very advantageous for athletes to want to live in Houston or in Texas. But I don't think that's going to sway you, especially when you're talking about Carlos is not just Carlos. It's Carlos and Daniela with child soon to be too. And Daniela, the former Miss Texas or whatever it is, that from who, depending on who you talk to and want to believe, still has aspirations to do something in entertainment, that Houston doesn't open up the avenues and the doors like L.A., like New York, like the fact that from an endorsement standpoint, too, they're going to roll in it as an athlete in those cities as opposed to doing your local Ford dealership commercials like Justin Verlander and or, you know, the Chevy for Carlos and Altuve. They don't equal out. You're going to make more money that will compensate for the state tax.
Yeah, I mean, every town has its perks. And I believe that agents let their athletes and their athletes know pretty universally for the reasons that Charlie said, where there's, you know, no state income tax. You mentioned as well the fact that there's cheaper real estate in Houston. That stuff does matter. That stuff does come into play. I feel like they know that. Now, one thing that you do have to consider, which doesn't always get brought up whenever you talk about the state tax, that, you know, Houston has its advantages in that, is that athletes get taxed wherever they're playing. So for 81 games of a Major League Baseball player, he's going to be taxed for his home games. And in Houston, you're not going to have that. But the other 81 games that you play away from Houston, you get taxed individually in each state. So you go play the Mets, you're being taxed for whatever you're receiving that day. You go play in Boston, Massachusetts is going to tax you. So it's only for the half of the games. Now, the Astros also play the Rangers where that would come into play. But that's only for the home games. You get taxed. All athletes do. You get taxed
not
for
just
wherever
athletes,
you're entertaining.
Jeremy, not just athletes.
Yeah.
Drove me nuts. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure you deal with it too. But every single time I got my check from the Rockets and I was like, wait a minute. What is this? Oh, no, you worked a day and a half in California. You worked 2 days. And so I'm like, I had an off day and I got docked for that. Oh, my God. It drove me nuts.
So, I mean, that's always part of the equation, too. And that's part of the equation that I don't see people talk about. Because, yes, you're right. The fact that Texas doesn't have that is something that comes into play. But it's only 50% of the time. The other 50%, they're being taxed on wherever they want to play, or wherever they're playing. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. So Justin Reed, in the news, obviously, did not play on Sunday, got benched, whatever you want to believe. Ryan Clark had the video saying that it was a disagreement when they were watching film and that Cully asked him a question and they disagreed. Cully said yesterday during his Monday press conference that it wasn't just a disagreement, that there was also a standard that was broken. Wouldn't say what standard was broken, whatever. But Justin Reed's in the final year of his deal. Third round pick by Brian Gain at the time. Pretty good one, too. 24 years old, free agent after the year. Do you let Justin Reed just walk without even talking about him if you're the Houston Texans talking to him?
You don't have a choice.
I mean, you can go to the negotiation table.
Unless you throw, like, silly Adams or Minka Fitzpatrick money at him, you've already sealed the deal. We talked about this yesterday. Like, the deal is done, and it's not the ball is not in your court anymore, Texans, because the way you crapped all over him and made him a public spectacle and tarnished his reputation, albeit short-term.
Did they, though?
Oh, they did.
They kind of dragged him through the mud.
Because you know what? As much as this is the thing that you have to consider with all the things that Cully did actually say yesterday. Well, if you're going to handle all of it internally, then handle it all internally. But the fact that you didn't handle it internally with the statements that you did make publicly and made clear that he broke a team rule, made clear that he did this and that, you tarnished his name. You tarnished an image that he has worked his entire professional career to build both on the field and off the field as a very spotless, clean reputation. You pissed him off. So if you want this player to come back, if you want him to be part of this positive culture for years to come, you certainly didn't send the right message or do it the right way to make sure that he wanted to stay. I think that every ounce of him right now is thinking, I want out. And I luckily have the opportunity to do that at the end of the season. I don't want to be a part of this hellhole anymore.
Even if it wasn't for this healthy scratch, if I'm the Texans, I'm not interested in bringing Justin Reed back. I believe Justin Reed's overrated, to be honest with you. If you look at his Pro Football Focus rating, 55 overall, middle of the pack as far as safeties go. If you're in a middle of the pack safety in the NFL, and you have Justin Reed that's going to be a free agent, maybe he wants top 10 money, something along those lines, do you really want to overspend on a guy that, you know, you don't really love? You just made him a healthy scratch. You just benched him for something that he was doing in the locker room. And then also you look at it from like an angle of when are the Texans going to be competitive again? Mm-hmm. Like, even if you're the most optimistic, and look, rebuilds happen fast, especially in football. Football is supposed to be an 8-8 league, even though they added an extra game, made it odd. But it's a league built on parity, whether it's the strength of schedule, it's the top draft picks, which can help you almost immediately. The Texans should be in the window of trying to compete again in three seasons. At that point, you're looking at Justin Reed. Yeah. He's still going to be 27 years old, but maybe looking for a new contract if he plays well. I'm not really interested in bringing Justin Reed back, even if this wasn't a problem this past weekend.
Let's go back and start with the fact that I would agree with you that let's just, again, as the Texans, draw the line in the sand. Culture, talent. Right? From a talent perspective, he's overrated, in my opinion. Right? You know that franchises that draft guys are going to border on giving him every opportunity and sticking with him so that they can look good for making the right pick and looking like they did the right thing by finding the right player and pat themselves on the back. But at a certain point, we've seen him give up on plays. We know he's not, he's aggressive, but he's not even his brother. His brother was an aggressive, like big time bring the wood hitter,
yeah,
as well as a safety. I think that from an ability standpoint, you're right. He's overrated. And again, if you're going to start talking about, or he thinks he's in the league of getting some of the top safety money in the game, then you already moved on anyway. But I think that, you know, from the standpoint of do I want to be here anymore, probably not, because no one wants to be a part of a rebuild. Everybody wants to win. And if you have the option of going anywhere and the money's the same, but I can go and join a team that's a contender or soon to be, or a team that's completely rebuilding that's 3 years away from sniffing it, I'm out. And I think that this is probably the reason why all of it played out the way it did in the last couple of days is they've already decided on both sides. But it's the same thing we said about Tunsil when we were talking about the best players on this team. You probably should have explored trading Justin Reed before the trade deadline, because in your heart of hearts, when you were doing the right thing for the organization on your whiteboards on a daily basis in the personnel department, you realized Tunsil and Reed are guys that aren't going to be as good and aren't going to be paid, but they're still going to be paid very well if you keep them on this roster by the time the rest of the team catches up.
And that's the thing that aggravates me too about this rebuild. Like you can have the conversation about culture. And look, I'm all for setting a culture in year one, especially whenever you consider that you're not going to be a winning team. So you're not putting culture ahead of messing with a playoff team. Like, you're putting culture ahead of maybe being a 4-win team as opposed to a 2-win team. What does that really matter? Not a whole lot. It's probably better long term to establish the culture. The part is you don't really trust who's leading the culture, right? Like, you still don't have the trust that Nick Caserio can be that guy. Jack Easterby's still around, who he's lost all of your trust because of the antics that he's had. You can't take David Culley seriously because he's kind of silly and a doofus, for a lack of a better word, at the presser. Like, you just don't really trust who's leading the culture. Like, I'm fine with culture. I've seen culture work. I've seen culture be established in year one and sacrificing wins in year one, and it leads to the long-term success of an organization, of a program, whatever. The problem, the difference with that, though, is you trust who was leading those cultures. With this one, there's distrust there, whether it's Caserio, who you haven't seen enough of, whether it's Easterby, who is a laughingstock around the NFL, or David Culley, who's a buffoon first-year head coach.
I mean, look, the thing that I'm getting to in all of this is you've added fuel to the fire for every player and every agent to say, I want to stay away, as opposed to culture is one thing to say, hey, our culture is in our locker room. Our culture is how we do things on a daily basis, how we carry ourselves when no one else is looking, so that we can establish something that when the players talk, it's something you want to be a part of. But the way they've established their culture outside of the building, as it gets exposed to the fan base, to the media, to everybody else, it's such a negative laughing joke to everyone that's covered, every national guest that we have on this show. just starts chuckling when they start talking about all the missteps of this franchise. I think about Adam Gase's eyes, and then I think about David Culley and the fact they had to get him gum. I was doing it to Brandon a couple segments ago where they had to get him gum because on the sidelines, he looks like he's that clueless kid waiting for mom to pick him up after school. The way he chews on his tongue, he just goes the whole time. So they had to get him some gum. Like, you're right, Easterby. Like, if the only thing that the aura around Easterby has no positivity or positive effect on the football side, but yet from an agent and a player's perspective, every time they're considering the Texans, they go, you still got that guy? What the hell does he do? Why is he still around? I don't know that I like that. Then I don't want to be a part of that. And if you have choices to make, like Reed does, as opposed to some of the guys you might trade for, then why do you want to be a part of that when you could go somewhere else where that isn't a factor?
Like, if it was Bill Belichick that benched Justin Reed, you wouldn't bat an eye.
Nope.
Because you trust Bill Belichick. Absolutely. If it was Nick Saban that did it, you wouldn't bat an eye because it's Nick Saban that did it.
See, it was Mike Tomlin.
Exactly. If it was a well-respected individual in the football, whether it's college football or NFL, whatever, in that world, you would understand it. So it's not so much the action of making Reed a healthy and active. It's the fact that the people that are the triad of the culture, you just don't trust.
Let me go a step further for you, Jeremy, because here's the other thing. If we all talk about Patriot South and all the Patriot ways, I dare say if Brian Flores put his foot down and made a decision like this, you would respect it. But because of the Patriot way people that the Texans have don't carry the same kind of clout, The fact that a move was made like this and everybody right away was like, team Justin Reed. Mm-hmm. Texans are idiots. Yeah. But Brian Flores, because at least he's got it, he's established himself as the leader and a guy that's going not afraid to make tough decisions, you would respect it more from that kind of Patriot guy as opposed to the guys you got on Kirby.
See, this is what it's more about. And this is where I kind of failed in having this conversation yesterday. It's more about we're just trying to look for reasons to bash on the Houston Texans. And rightfully so. They deserve the bashing that they're getting. But if it was anybody else around the NFL, at least a respected individual around the NFL, no one would bat an eye that Justin Reed had an argument with Bill Belichick and he broke a standard within the organization. Wouldn't bat an eye. The problem is that it's a mockery of what those standards are, at least from what we've seen with this Houston Texans team.
You're not going to have that guy in a rebuild, though. Like, no matter who it is, you're not going to have the guy that everybody respects. I don't think you guys are putting enough behind just forcing Justin Reed out the door. Like, I understand that you're worried about paying him down the road. You got to win games first. Like, if you can't hold on to him 3 or 4 years from now, big deal. He's one. Maybe he's overrated, but he's still one of the best players on the team, right?
Yeah, I would say he's one of the best players on the defense. But if winning games is what you're trying to accomplish, and absolutely it should be winning games.
I think starting next year,
Brendan, you forget Lex Delanie Johnson. We started calling out Justin Reed for giving the whole I don't give a rat's ass on tackles, pulling up and going, yeah, I'm making a business decision. I'm not putting my head in the middle of that play. I'm not going to go and make that tackle because of where we sit as a franchise. If you're already doing that and showing signs of that when you need a guy that's bought into the culture of this, then it's already been made in terms of the decision's already been made.
The cachet of Justin Reed is more than the performance of Justin Reed on the field. Like, I don't think he's going to help you win tons of games. If he's one of your best players on the defensive side, that's not going to be a very good defense. I feel like you can improve for a cheaper contract than what he's going to get in the offseason.
I just think you have to keep some good players around because there's not many on the roster.
No, sure.
Right, but who's to say you're not going to do exactly what you're going to do with the rest of the roster and find those good players as you progress? Because the whole thing this year, and it goes back to the fact that wins and losses don't matter to this organization. They matter to the players. And from a player's perspective, every guy on this roster right now is just trying to build their resume back up to find a home for next season. And most of them aren't going to be here. So if Justin Reed's another one of those guys that isn't going to be here, they'll find another free safety. They'll find another guy, whether it's on the cheap, short term, cheap money for another prove it deal, or they draft a guy, or they when they start getting good, they find a guy. But I don't think that they're in a, like, of the key positions on this team that you would want to keep, Tunsil has so much more value because left tackle is one of the most valuable positions other than quarterback and skill position guys. But if you look at a safety and go, they're a dime a dozen unless you get one of those upper echelon guys. And you start looking at some of the upper echelon guys going, I still don't think they're worth the money that they're getting paid because that money could be better suited allocating it other places.
Yeah, I think you can get more production for the dollar than what Justin Reed's going to demand. And if you want to take it back to the trade deadline, I think they screwed up not trading Justin Reed. I thought it was a loss when they didn't trade Brandon Cooks. It was a loss that they didn't trade Justin Reed, a guy who could have gotten you a mid-round pick that's on the last year of his deal that now looks like he's going to walk for free. So if there's a failure there, It was not trading him at the deadline. 713.
That's what I said. It's Caserio, too. The fact that from a player analyzation and development process, you're not only looking at this year's roster for this year, you're looking at for the future. If you already knew in your mind in those meeting rooms that he wasn't a part of it, get rid of him.
He fell in the rebuild. He really is failing in the rebuild with what they're doing.
And it's a
doing.
Two-win situation. You get rid of him because he wasn't going to be a part of it. You also continue to embrace the suck privately, so that you continue to get the draft picks to get the next Justin Reed in here.
713-780-ESPN. Are we crazy? Are we losing our mind? 713-780-3776. Another ugly game in prime time in the NFL last night. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
He is a musical genius, buddy.
I believe you. I don't know why.
Are you not like a Stevie Wonder fan?
I love Stevie Wonder. Great. Great at what he does.
He's a musical genius. I have all his albums. I got music on my mind. Fountain of the Musiquarium.
That sounds like Mike Tyson to me.
Eddie Murphy.
That sounded way more Mike Tyson.
My name is Mike Tyson. I'm the best. I can't do Eddie Murphy.
All right. 713-780-ESPN. 713-780-3776.
Mike Tyson, best punch I threw was against Buster Douglas.
Love
so Robin
Mike
Gibbons
Tyson.
Put me up against the wall.
Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Will, you're in the high with the Killer Bees.
Hey, how's it going, man? Long-time listener, first-time caller. I just wanted to – I know we were talking about Brandon Cooks and Justin Reed trades and everything. What if, I don't know if it's been discussed, if the Texans are still kind of being looked at as, you know, low-level NFL team due to Bill O'Brien, and, you know, they're treating us that way when it comes to the Brandon Cooks, and they're not offering thirds, fourths, or anything like that. So Nick Caserio has to kind of, I'm not going to give a fifth up for Brandon Cooks or Justin Reed.
Appreciate
Thanks for the call, Will.
Look, Brandon Cooks is still under contract, so that's. I mean, that point is a good point whenever you talk about Brandon Cooks, because maybe you can trade Brandon Cooks in the offseason. So if Caserio didn't get at least a third-round draft pick for Brandon Cooks at the deadline, yeah, he probably should have held on to him. I don't believe that to be true. But since he's under contract, that you can play that card. It's fair to play that card. Now, a dude that's in the final year of his deal that you have an inkling's not going to be back, and now that nail's in the coffin to me because he's unhappy, you're unhappy with him. Like, you should have a little bit of the foresight there that if he's not in your future plans, get something for the commodity. Don't let the commodity walk away for free. So even if it was a third or fourth round pick for Justin Reed and you're 90% sure that he's not going to be a Houston Texan in 2022, yeah, trade him. Look, Nick Caserio looked okay on draft day. If you look back, Lopez in the sixth round looks like a pretty solid pick. I'm not going to sit here and sing the praises of Davis Mills. You know that. But Caserio showed that he can hit on a late-round draft pick. So if you can get a fourth for a dude that you think's 90% gone, do it!
Bro, I mean, it's as simple as being in a bad marriage, right? But you know she's leaving, and you know that she's completely done with you. But in the process, if you instead of just letting her walk, you get the car and the house or some kind of assets in return, you know what? Win-win. You go do what you got to do, sweetheart, and I got something that, at least for my time and effort, that shows that I put in some work. So you know what? You put in some work with Justin Reed. Instead of letting him walk out the door in a divorce that's final with everything going in his direction, you get a third or a fourth round pick and you move on.
I'm fascinated by this comp. I love good comps.
That's
I'm not sure
a good
how.
Comp?
I don't know yet. I don't really know how I feel about this
unless,
comp.
Unless
I'm
you're emotionally attached and you really truly love him,
I just
loves Verlander. I think that in any kind of a, you know, I can't say it's just a relationship, because in most relationships you don't have financial ties to that person from the standpoint of a marriage. But if you're in a marriage and you know it's going south and you know she's going to leave you, and I don't care why,
I just want to know why
you know it's going to be separated. You're going to have you come to a separation very soon. Then instead of just letting her walk out the door and saying, take what you want and goodbye, you say, no, you know what? I'm going to make sure that this is done the right way. And at least I get the dog in the car or something out of it. And you say, you know what? I got something out of for my time and effort.
Look, it's a good comp. I'm just wondering how you had that so on the ready is kind of my point.
Like, I'm a very witty, smart, sharp person, and I realize that I can make these comparisons in my sleep.
Mm-hmm. I hope that's it. I hope there's not something else you're not telling us is all I'm saying. That's all
Pretty
I'm saying.
Sure, you can talk to the anchor in the morning at KPRC 2, and she could tell you that she's Alice in Wonderland. She's that happy. We're fine.
I mean, actions, words, you know.
You want to look at some pictures of Carmen Electra and Shakira?
I don't know how that's relative at all.
Because we're going to throw it back at you. I mean, you're trying to, you know, we can all talk about things.
Did you watch the Monday Night Football game last night?
I watched the Rockets, and then I flipped back and forth. It was painful yet entertaining from a football standpoint because it wasn't a blowout and there was always a chance for the Seahawks. But when you look at it, I obviously just the same way I look at the Rockets. I'm looking at it from – or the Texans. I'm looking at it from a different perspective, and I'm trying to think big picture. And as I looked at those two teams last night, and I kept hearing the announcers over and over talk about the fact that is Heinicke the guy? And they're going to give him every opportunity right now to be the guy. But will he end up being the guy? I started thinking, could Deshaun Watson be the guy? Would he be open to a trade to D.C.? Could he be another team in the mix? Seattle, because for some strange reason, and don't tell me he was double covered the whole game, D.K. Metcalf didn't touch a ball or get a ball thrown his way until the final minutes of the game. So you look at it and go, there is definitely the roses that have come up in Green Bay in the middle of the frozen tundra, the way Rodgers' situation played out, has not played out the same way in Seattle with Russ the way he was in the offseason. You got to believe he's going to be driving home even more, I want out, or I need more guys around me. And maybe Deshaun, with a DK Metcalf and some of the assets you already have on the team, you say, we'd be better off. Now, I'm not saying Russ is the guy that's going to end up in Houston, but I think that Seattle could be in the market for Russ if they have the right assets to throw at you, and that it somehow you could either do a three-way where Russ ends up with a competitive team. But I think that there's two teams you could possibly throw in the mix. That's how I looked at that game last night.
I don't see that with Seattle. I see it more with the football team, though. Because football team look like they, you know, they have some pieces. They have some good offensive pieces, whether it's Gibson, who's, you know, blowing me away with what he's doing at running back after he was a receiver at Memphis. McKissick's a good third down guy. You have Scary Terry on the outside. Like, that team's ready for a good quarterback. And with the defense you have on the other side, get Chase Young back healthy next year, they might be a quarterback away from being the right best team in the NFC. Seattle, they look a little bit more like they're the, you know what's hitting the fan. 3-8 now in Seattle. Looks like it's getting rocky there. Now, I did have an under on Seattle for the win total on the year, so I'm not hating it. Not hating it. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. LSU makes a splash. That and the ripple effect coming up next. As you listen to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, let me tell you about Apollo Men's Health, Dr. O and his staff. Look, Dr. O is a businessman. He is a doctor, and he is all about taking care of the people of Houston. He knew they weren't getting taken care of the right way. He worked at some of those other places trying to help with men's health issues. And he realized, look, they were just doing it the wrong way. They were doing a lot of hemming and hawing, a lot of cash grab opportunities for the business, but the people weren't getting what they need, which is results. So he started his own business. He has two locations to better serve you near downtown Houston, and at both locations, you're going to get tip-top medical professionals that are going to deal with you at every step of the way. Your health is your wealth. You have to invest in yourself. That means from the boardroom to the bedroom to the weight room. If you're having issues, they have results. They have a program that they can put you on, and they can get you where you need to go. And it starts with you making that first appointment. Go to ApolloMH.com. Book it. Once you do, you're going to find out most major insurance is accepted, discounts for military personnel and first responders. More so, what you're going to find out is the people at Apollo really care. So they're going to ask you tough questions, but they're going to be really open with you in the fact that the honest results you give them by giving you them the answers that are, of what's really bothering you, are going to lead them to a plan and a program that's going to show you that you can get that energy back. You can feel better than you felt when you were in your 20s. And you can be living your best life on a daily basis. Men and women, that starts with hormone therapy, which they do there. But also for men, there's so many different options, so many different ways, from workouts to diets to all the different supplements you need. It's all under one roof. Check them out today. It's the good people at Apollo Men's Health.
Well, hello.
To call into the HR&P listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN.
Dial the phone.
Disappointed by your HR and payroll technology? Maybe you need to outsource your administration. Go to HRP.net to learn more. Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
ladies and gentlemen, the weekend. LSU made a splash yesterday.
By the way, he called the weekend a musical genius, comparing it to Stevie Wonder.
He didn't compare it to Stevie Wonder. You put that in my mouth.
Well, because I called Stevie Wonder a musical genius. You talk about a musical genius. It's the weekend has written one album for 2 years. Now, granted, it's gotten accolades and up for awards and stuff. But in that same amount of time, Stevie Wonder would have produced like 3 blockbusters.
I wasn't making a hot take about the weekend comparing him to Stevie Wonder. I just enjoy his music.
Short term, he's good. Long term, we're talking like Eli Manning.
Well, he only works on the weekends.
Long term credentials.
he's only working two days a week.
He's not even the Eli Manning yet. In terms of when we're talking about the Bradys of the world, Stevie Wonder, Prince, Michael Jackson. Those are the top 3 of the top of all time. Those are geniuses.
Oh, yeah? Has Stevie Wonder done a Super Bowl?
Yeah, exactly.
I believe he has.
Has he?
Yeah.
Has he done a Super Bowl? Brian Kelly, the new head coach in Baton Rouge.
Yes.
I'll say this. He's a bigger name than I thought that they were going to get. I've been bashing on LSU saying, is this really an elite job? Herman turned him down. Jimbo Fisher turned him down, which Billy Lucci, by the way, covers A&M better than anybody, said that Jimbo Fisher did turn down LSU. So it looks like Brian Kelly was second, maybe third target for the Tigers, maybe behind Lincoln Riley, maybe behind Jimbo. Nonetheless,
I think it's more like 5.
You think it's 5?
I think he was the 5th choice.
Okay, I mean, potato, potato, right?
Right.
What do you think of the hire of Brian Kelly leaving Notre Dame to go to LSU?
I was shocked when he left, but I think that unlike Lincoln Riley and his little nut syndrome, doing it for selfish reasons to really cash in and never have to play the big boys until the final playoff, if you get there. I think that from the standpoint of Brian Kelly, he realized what he was up against. Like, he had maximized his time at Notre Dame. One, Notre Dame wasn't upgrading the facilities like he wanted, so he could stay competitive with Alabama and all the top programs in the country. Two, he's making 5. You're going to suddenly give him 10, right? Or close to it.
Yeah.
Double my income and go to a team in the major conference that everybody watches and pays attention to, that has produced so much NFL talent, and give them the name that they're desperate for, that they've been passed over for already, so that it saves face for them. It's a win-win all the way around, and that's why he made the deal. I think that the fact that the Tigers were interested in Lincoln Riley, but the real kicker here is Lincoln Riley and Brian Kelly have the same agent. So the minute, from an agent perspective, this is the hotbed of all hotbeds. Of as an agent, I go, yeah, so my guy is not going to be your guy. But before we close this door, let me throw out another name you might be interested, because he could be your guy, and I could make that happen.
Who is his agent? Trace Armstrong.
The former Chicago Bear.
That was Tom Herman's agent.
Is that
whenever
right?
Whenever he was flirting with
LSU. Right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, well, different AD now, though. Trace Armstrong is the guy in agents in college football coaches.
But, like, smart as smart gets from an agent perspective of, hey, I'm still going to cash in on this. I'm just going to cash in with another guy. But it might be a guy that wasn't on your radar, you might have thought was available. Because here's the other thing from Brian Kelly's perspective. Whether it be because of the high academic standards and all the things that go with Notre Dame, you got there a couple of times, and you got your doors blown off. So at a certain point, from a realistic perspective, I've done all I can do to maximize Notre Dame football, but it's not going to maximize what I want to do as a head football coach in college football, and that is win it all and have a chance to do it all the time without having to really overextend myself. So I'm going to LSU, where I'm going to get a whole bunch of NFL talent every single year. And as long as I do the right things with them and have the right staff, I'm going to win every year.
That's the mindset of Brian Kelly with this move, because he's going to Baton Rouge, where you can lock up top 5 recruiting classes, where you're a real contender for a national championship, won a couple of years ago. Whereas Notre Dame, you're right, get to the dance, but maybe never quite have the talent needed to win a couple of games in the playoffs. And now a playoff expansion, too, you're going to have to win more than a couple of games in the playoff. This, to me, is him chasing the national championship that's been elusive to him in his career.
LSU would never go take a fifth-year senior starter off of Wisconsin's team and insert him as the starting quarterback and expect to do things. Brian Kelly,
they haven't been that far, though, with Joe Burrow. I mean, Big Ten quarterback that was a backup, won a natty
with
him.
But I'm saying, out of Ohio State.
A little different than Wisconsin.
Look, let me just tell you this. Graham Mertz was the first 5-star recruit Wisconsin got in the history of the program, and he has crapped the bed. Ohio State and Georgia, now if you're talking about quarterbacks there, now you can, and Oklahoma, but you can roll through
four or five five-stars and know that just because they didn't get the job there doesn't mean that they're not going to be successful elsewhere. So that's why I'm saying from Brian Kelly's perspective, I got to look at it from I got a guy that at least has got his grades in line. He's a really good student, and he's a guy that, you know, he's going to be the odd man out at Wisconsin. I can bring him into Notre Dame, and hopefully I can win enough to get in the playoff again, as opposed to at LSU going, well, let's see, former NFL quarterback Brad Johnson's kid's available, and if I don't like him, then I could go to here or here or here, and they're all five stars.
I am fascinated by the hire. I believe it's a good hire. It's more splashy than I thought it was going to be. It's not a complete slam dunk. He's never coached anywhere near the South. We'll see if he can get it done in Baton Rouge. You want one from your never-believe head coaches, and head coaches lie all the time. Here was Brian Kelly last week saying he'd never leave Notre Dame.
No. I mean, look, I think Mike Tomlin had the best line, right? You know, unless that fairy godmother comes by with that, you know, $250 million check, my wife would want to take a look at it first. I'd have to run it by her.
Was Scott Woodward the fairy godmother? 10 years, $95 million. Maybe not 250. 95 ain't bad. More than 26 of 32 NFL coaches, by the way.
It just solidifies the used car salesman that you can never trust mentality that I have for college football coaches. Because if you delve deeper and if you read some of the articles, like, I'm curious how many of his staff he's going to bring with him. Because if you heard the stories last night, Jeremy, right before the announcement, his recruiting staff was leaving the house of a top recruit and basically had every cuss word in the book to say, I just lied my ass off to a family about their kid because I want him to come to Notre Dame while my coach, my boss, who I'm trying to convince the kid to come play for, just basically turned and ran out the door before I could even finish the conversation.
Yeah, Brian Kelly's getting torched for how he handled it. He sent out a message in the TeamWorks app, which I actually have the TeamWorks app. It's part of every program. You can send messages to the entire travel party, the entire team, whatever the case may be. That's how he let them know after the news had already came out. And then he talked to the team for 11 minutes this morning. He's getting absolutely crushed for how he handled it. I don't know the right way for a coach to handle it, though. Like, what are you supposed to do? Like, yeah, you should – look – you should handle it with respect. You should handle it for the players. But that stuff's going to trickle out. And you're not always going to control it. And no one's blaming him for leaving Notre Dame to take LSU. They're just blaming him for how he handled it. I don't know the right way to handle something like that.
I was going
to
ask you guys where you stand on this because some are blaming him. And some are saying, look, and even ex-NFL guys that are on, you know, major networks are saying, you know, when you're a parent and you're trusting your kid to play for this coach and you think that if he's committed, he's going to be a father figure for 4 years or however long he's going to be there. That's the key. Wait a minute. For however long he's going to be there. So you're saying the loyalty has to be from the coach to the kid, but the kid who's going to skip the bowl game, who's going to sit out and work out with an agent because he's getting ready for the draft, that's not going to give you 4 years, 3 years, whatever it may be, because he's in his own best interest too. At what point do you draw the line in the sand and say, it's a business? Just like, I know it's college, and so everybody wants to have that kind of sunshine mentality that it's not. But it's a business just like the major sports in professional sports, and everybody's making business decisions. So therefore, if a coach makes a business decision, sure, I'm sure somewhere deep inside of him, he feels bad for some of the kids that he left after he convinced them to come there. But like Lincoln Riley, he got five or six of his recruits to immediately, because I'm sure he picked up the phone and called them, unlike sending text to his team, he picked up a phone and called all his recruits and goes, hey, just going to give you a little inside tip. I'm going to SC. You coming with me? I want you still. Boom. It's a business. That I wonder where, because there are people being critical of him right now and saying, you can't
tons
do this
of
to
people.
The kids.
I mean, the kids can also enter the transfer portal and not play in the bowl game as well. Now, the money being thrown around is more evidence of why the student athletes have been getting the NIL deals a long time ago. Mm-hmm. Let's start the Luke Fickell to Notre Dame rumors. That way, maybe they don't game prep the Houston Cougars on Saturday. Meanwhile, Lincoln Riley introduced as the USC head coach yesterday, explains why he's headed to the City of Angels.
We came here because we believe in what this place can be. And that is because that will be done with the players on the field. And to win championships, to get this program to where we all know and believe that it should be, it's going to take every single one of us. And we are going to be committed to, one, bringing the best staff in the country here to USC to help guide this team.
the perks for Lincoln Riley going to USC, $110 million. Yep. USC's buying both of his homes in Norman for $500,000 more than the asking price, a total of $1 million, U of H math there. They're buying of a $6 million home in L.A. and unlimited use of the PJ, the private jet, 24-7 for his family. The lead there to me, why does he have two homes in Norman? Why does he have two homes in Norman?
But also, as you and I would think about, too, where's the membership to Riviera?
I'm sure that's probably
where's the
Riv
or one of the big country clubs? I need that, too.
I guarantee
you
it's in it.
And boosters, I got to talk to them.
I guarantee you it's in it. They just probably ran out of characters on this tweet. It's got to be in it. Absolutely, it's in it.
I think there's a lifetime supply of size small men's tidy whities too, because he's got little nut syndrome, and that's why he avoided the SEC.
713-780-ESPN. 713-780-3776. The Rockets are indeed lighting the fuse. Winning streak for the Rockets. That's next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
I don't blame it, Don.